Welcome to Native America Calling from the west side of Albuquerque. I'm Monica Brain. The list of podcasts continue to grow every day. With the vast number of them out there, it can be hard to find ones you connect with. Today, we're sampling a handful of podcasts by Native producers that you might like, whether you're gravitating towards food sovereignty, Indian land jurisdiction, or tribal politics. And maybe you have some Native-led podcasts you can recommend. What are you listening to? We're back right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Over the weekend, President-elect Joe Biden introduced members of his climate team, including Congresswoman Deb Haaland. Biden says he's nominating Haaland for Secretary of the Interior, touting her work on environmental issues.
As the first Native American cabinet secretary in the history of the United States of America, she'll be a true steward of our national parks, our natural resources, and all of our lands. The federal government has long broken promises to Native American tribes who've been on this land since time immemorial. With her appointment, Congresswoman Haaland will help me strengthen the nation-to-nation relationship, and I'm honored to accept that she's been willing when I called her to accept this critical role.
Haaland, in a three-minute speech, first acknowledged the lands of the Lenape people they were on in Delaware, accepted the nomination, and mentioned some of her struggles in life, including homelessness, using food stamps, and raising her child as a single mother. Haaland says her struggles give perspective. She talked about her Pueblo culture, boarding schools, and federal Indian policies.
This moment is profound when we consider the fact that a former Secretary of the Interior once proclaimed his goal to, quote, civilize or exterminate us. I'm a living testament to the failure of that horrific ideology. I also stand on the shoulders of my ancestors and all the people who have sacrificed so that I can be here.
Haaland says she spent much time outdoors learning to respect the earth and value resources, and says she's ready to serve. The Biden-Harris climate team will include the Secretary of Energy and Environmental and Climate Advisors. Montana's Missing Indigenous Persons Task Force met last week for an update. Of the 179 missing persons in the state, 29% are Native American. Yellowstone Public Radio's Caitlin Nicholas has more.
Presiding Officer and State Deputy Attorney General Melissa Schlichting announced she was leaving the position to start a new job with the U.S. Attorney's Office in Helena. The MMIP task force voted unanimously to appoint Ellie Bundy, a task force member and tribal council member of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes, as new presiding officer. In an update about current missing persons cases, Tina Chamberlain said 29 missing natives are under 21 years old, and 17 of them have been missing for over a year.
We are mindful that this is an overrepresentation when you look at Native Americans in Montana by population. It is keeping in line with what we've seen month to month. I think that last month at 31% was probably our highest, but this is still a very high number of missing people.
The task force said their missing persons reporting website, created in partnership with Blackfeet Community College, is being updated to work better with local law enforcement. The Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes will be the second tribal nation to use the new website once it's fully operational. The task force also announced the CSKT finished their tribal community response plan. The plan is part of a federal Department of Justice project to develop protocols with tribal nations so federal, tribal, and state law enforcement work together more efficiently on missing persons cases. Ellie Bundy says the CSKT are prepared to assist other Montana tribes in creating their own protocols.
As other tribes here start working on their plans, CSKT is more than willing to help in any way we can.
The Fort Peck, Assiniboine, and Sioux tribes will likely be the next tribal nation to join the project. I'm Caitlin Nicholas.
Holiday food boxes will be distributed Tuesday on the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe in South Dakota during a drive-up curbside event. The boxes are designed to help create a meal for families. They include various holiday food items. The Cheyenne River Youth Project is teaming up with the tribe's Indian Child Welfare Act office to host the holiday food box event. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Thank you.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme. If you're a Native American expanding or starting a business, the Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program supports your lender so your lender can make the business loan you need. Info by emailing dci@bia.gov. The Office of Indian Energy and Economic Development supports this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, joining you through Skype. Whether you're a regular podcast listener or just starting out with podcasts, we have some recommendations for you today. We have a handful of productions that cover the gamut. In the Red Nation podcast, Nick Estes talks with activists and academics about history and politics. The new host of CBC's Unreserved, Phelan Johnson, will be joining us to talk about her show and a new take on history. Also, we'll check in with Natalie Welch of The Creative Native and our own Andy Murphy with her Indigenous food show, Toasted Sister, and John Kane, who's been around more than most with his show, Let's Talk Native. Do you like podcasts? Are you excited to share podcasts with us today? Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. The number to join is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us now is Dr. Natalie Welch. She is an assistant professor at Linfield University and host of Creative Native. And she's a citizen of the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians. Welcome to Native America Calling, Natalie.
Shio, hello. Good morning and afternoon for West East Coasters.
That's right. That's right. Well, it's great to have you on the show today, Natalie. And tell us a little bit about Creative Native.
Sure. Thanks, Monica. I appreciate you guys having me on. Yeah, so I started Creative Native a couple years ago. I really just saw kind of a lack of Native voices in the podcasting space. And now I'm really glad to see there's so many more. But at the time, I was like, man, I'd be really great if there was a podcast that was, you know, hosted by a Native talking about things I was interested in, and particularly Native athletes and people who were doing kind of creative things professionally. So that's kind of how I got it started.
Yes. Yeah, so your podcast is primarily an interview type podcast. Tell us about some of the people that you've interviewed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I really like to think of it as just kind of a, you know, a way for people to kind of be a part of a conversation. And I've always just enjoyed having people tell their own stories and kind of tell about, you know, their upbringing and things like that. So I've had people like Titan Saltes, the University of New Mexico football player and amazing advocate for suicide prevention from the Pine Ridge Reservation. People like Dr. Elise Ali Joseph, who's a professor at NAU and kind of one of the inspirations for me when I was doing my dissertation, because she did her dissertation on Native athletes using a college education to kind of further their, using their sport to kind of further their career and get a college education. And it's a really a variety of people, and I'm starting to expand to not just Native folks, but people who are allies of Native folks and who are just kind of helping move Indian country in any way.
Yeah, those are critically important voices that we like to hear as well. Natalie, how do you prepare for putting an episode together?
Yeah, I like to kind of just do some deep dive research on whoever I'm speaking with and think about where they're from. And I always like to ask people if they have some connection to sport, like how did they get involved in sport? Was it family? Was it through school and things like that? And usually that gets the conversation going pretty easily. But yeah, just finding as many articles and things online that I can, stalking some of the social media and things like that. And then also trying to be timely of like what's happening in the world. There was a recent episode where, you know, or me and Dr. Elise Ali Joseph talked over the summer during kind of the height of the COVID pandemic, and talked specifically about how kind of our communities were trying to make it through that and using sport as a way to kind of get through that as well.
Natalie, where can folks find your podcast?
Yeah, it's actually available on Apple iTunes, Spotify, and on SoundCloud. And just search for Creative Native Podcast, and it should pop up pretty easily.
And how often can we expect new episodes to come out?
I'm very, I like to say I'm very res in this way because it's very sporadic. Like sometimes there'll be one every week, and then it'll be a couple months. It kind of just depends. But I try to do at least one episode a month, and there'll be a new one actually coming this week with a colleague of mine who's a professor at UNC Pembroke and a former collegiate swimmer who's what I like to classify as one of those allies who's been getting involved in research and helping the Native community.
Well, Dr. Natalie Welch, thank you so much for joining us today, talking about your podcast, The Creative Native, and you can get that wherever you find podcasts. We'll also have a link to it on our website as well. Thanks, Natalie.
No, thank you, guys. I appreciate it, and hope everyone stays healthy through these holidays.
Today, we are talking about podcasts. If you've got some spare time, maybe you're cleaning up your house or out walking your animals and you want to listen to something interesting, there are a ton of Native podcasts out there that you can tune into. We're just giving you a small sampling today. If you've got a favorite podcast you like to listen to, give us a call and share 1-800-996-2848. Let's head over to New York to talk with John Kane. He's the host of Let's Talk Native with John Kane, and he is Mohawk. Welcome back to Native America Calling, John.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a while, but it's good to speak with you.
Yeah, it's been quite some time. So your show's a twofer. It's on radio and a podcast. Did you find that you reach a wider audience once you went from just radio to adding the podcast into it?
Well, you know, I started off doing radio, and that before podcasts were really a thing. And, you know, so I was on commercial radio. I was actually buying airtime. Then I was invited to take a space on WBAI in New York City, and more recently on WPFW in Washington, D.C. I started posting the audio of my radio shows as podcasts, and then I switched a little bit. So now I do I essentially have podcasts and radio shows, and so the radio shows are podcasts as well. What I'm hoping to do in the beginning of the year, sometime, if not January or February, I may switch to doing three half-hour podcasts that are Let's Talk Native. And my radio show in New York City is actually called Resistance Radio, and having that show be my Washington radio show and my New York radio show, and having my podcast be, like I said, three half-hour per week podcasts.
And tell us a little bit about each of these things that folks can tune into.
Well, the Let's Talk Native, you know, began, when I posted up, I know it's hard to visualize, but I post Let's Talk Native, and I put dot, dot, dot after it as if to say, Let's Talk Native whatever, you know, culture, language, politics, advocacy, activism, you know, all that stuff. And I wanted to be a voice that wasn't already out there. And so while I'm not trying to necessarily, you know, be a shock jock or be an outlier, I want to say some of the things that I believe other people are thinking but are just not hearing out in the mainstream media or even now in the podcast universe. So I try to present a perspective that isn't as widely held as may be found in other places. So that's what Let's Talk Native is. Now, when I started doing radio in New York, it was a talkback show, and so I used to call it just Let's Talk, and we took in phone callers and that kind of thing. And there I was offering a Native perspective to issues that affect everybody. They weren't just Native issues, but I wanted to offer a Native perspective. So my radio shows, which are in these major metropolitan areas, are a little bit more geared towards that, offering a Native perspective to the issues that we're all confronted with, where Let's Talk Native is really about Native issues. And it's not necessarily singling out or targeting a Native audience, but it's certainly more geared towards me talking to Native people and presenting perspective that maybe they haven't heard before, but they can identify with once they do hear it.
Mm-hmm. One of the things about podcasts that is a little bit different than, say, for example, this live radio show is that there's a little bit less opportunity for on-the-go live interaction. John, which do you prefer, being able to interact and take callers, or just presenting something in one shot?
I love having interaction with callers, and that's why the radio shows are still an important part of what I do. The problem is COVID's kind of screwed things up, and so we're all doing everything so remotely. And there's a lot of technical glitches that come in with trying to have a studio in New York City, me connecting up with them from Seneca Territory out in the Western New York area, and then them trying to field calls and the lags and all that other stuff. So it's been a little awkward. But I do love interacting with people, and so when I put my podcasts up, I also put them up as videos on YouTube as a YouTube video. I have a YouTube channel called Let's Talk Native TV on YouTube, and I take those videos and I put them on Facebook. And so while I am broadcasting these things as videos, I am watching them and I'm trying to interact with people in the comment areas at very least, and that's about as interactive as I can get with the videos, I guess.
I love it. I think it's great. And I want to talk to you a little bit more about how you, the kind of equipment that you use and incorporating video with this. But if you're just joining us today, we are talking podcasts, and we've got a number of podcast hosts lined up to share with you. If you want to share a podcast that you like, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. John, stick with us until after the break. But if folks want to just check you out right now, it's letstalknative.com. Is that right?
Yeah, if you go to that website, you can find links to the podcast. And, of course, as your previous guest suggested, once you become a podcast, most of the major platforms carry you. So you can find Let's Talk Native on any.
All right. We'll be right back.
What sometimes starts as a childhood love for animals can lead to a rewarding and busy life as a veterinarian. Native veterinarians bring a unique perspective to healing animals. We'll hear about that and why there's a need for Native veterinarians on the next Native America Calling.
Support for this program is provided by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles the issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. What AARP does might surprise people. For more information and resources, including member benefits, AARP advocacy, and more, go to aarp.org.
You're tuned in to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain. And before the break, we were talking with John Kane. He's the host of Let's Talk Native with John Kane. And John, talk to us about, I know you use professional studios and stuff like that, but any suggestions that you have for somebody who's starting out, who wants to sort of get into the game about equipment, things like that?
Well, there's a ton of different ways to approach it. And if you're going to do video as well, there's Open Broadcast System software, I think, is what we call OBS. I started off using a camera that was specific to streaming, especially on on platforms like YouTube and Facebook, which is called Mevo. And so that's what I started out with. It did have some limitations in terms of, you know, being able to add picture in a picture and that kind of stuff. So I still use it on occasion, but I use an OBS system. I have a soundboard that's called a Rodecaster, which allows me to basically plug my phone in, both Bluetooth or through a cable, and that allows me to record, you know, multiple microphones, multiple channels. I can also, you know, put some, you know, audio into the mix with the touch of a button. So there's certain things that you can do, and some of this stuff isn't too pricey, but you can grow with it. And, you know, basically, if you've got a computer and access to the internet, which for native people sometimes is a real problem. I know one of the biggest hurdles that we have here is that we don't have hardwired high-speed internet here. I'm basically using a MiFi jetpack from Verizon to broadcast over the internet. I had to put a special device on my roof that enhances the signal because they don't have a fiber optic cable running through Seneca territory.
Wow. Well, John, what can we look forward to? What do you have coming up?
Well, look, I do take on issues and offer a perspective that are not always the most commonly held views. I take a position that Native people's votes aren't that significant in the American system, and that we are stronger as distinct people confronting the American politics than trying to, you know, fix it from within. My next show is going to be talking about Deborah Haaland's appointment and some of the things that I'm guardedly optimistic, but guarded nonetheless about that. So I will be take on mascot issues, you know, political issues, environmental issues. We address it all, but oftentimes we take a harder position than some people perhaps take into consideration.
Well, John, thank you so much for joining us today. And if folks want to connect and check out his show, we'll have a link on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. Nice to hear from you, John.
Well, thank you so much for doing this program in the first place and for having me as a guest. I appreciate it.
Yep. And if you want to join our conversation, give us a call. It's 1-800-996-2848. Let's talk with Rebecca Nagel now. She's the host of the podcast This Land. And Rebecca, thanks. And Rebecca is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Hey, I wanted to get your opinion. John just weighed in a little bit on Deborah Haaland. Before we get started, your thoughts on Congresswoman Deborah Haaland becoming the Secretary of Interior?
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I think that it's a historic moment to have Native leadership in charge of a department that historically has done so much harm to our tribes and still has so much power, you know, and we oftentimes talk about that harm as being historical, but, you know, we saw the current administration of the Department of Interior, you know, take tribal land out of trust for the first time since the termination era. So I think it's really important to have that Native leadership. And I would add, too, that there, I think there are a lot of different constituencies that Haaland will need to listen to in that position. And there's a specific constituency that's still asking for her to make a statement of support. And that's the Freedmen descendants of the five tribes. And she hasn't replied to that request yet. So with the celebration of her appointment, I'm still hoping that we can hear from her that as Secretary of Interior, she will uphold the treaty rights and the trust responsibility the United States government has to all Native Americans, including the descendants of freedmen citizens of the five tribes, those who are currently enrolled and those also that have been disenrolled.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to hear where she, if she takes a stand or if she takes no stand or, you know, where she stands on that. Well, Rebecca, we're talking podcasts today, and man, your podcast hit many top 10 lists, top 20 lists for 2020. Tell us about This Land.
Yeah, so the first season of This Land covers the Supreme Court case it was originally, it's had many names, actually. It was originally called the Murphy case, and now people call it the McGirt case, or officially McGirt v. Oklahoma. But basically, it was this question of, had Congress ever gotten rid of or ended the reservation rights of the Muscogee Creek Nation? And there are four tribes in Oklahoma that have a similar history to Muscogee Creek Nation. And so the case had implications for the land of treaty rights of five tribes here in Oklahoma and the land in about half the state. And so the case originated in this sort of odd place, which was actually a small town murder in the late 90s. So a Creek citizen murdered another Creek citizen and was sentenced to death by the state of Oklahoma. But then he argued that Oklahoma actually did not have the jurisdiction to execute him, let alone prosecute him, because his crime occurred on his tribe's reservation. And so then that question of whether or not the reservation of Muscogee Creek Nation was legally still intact is what went all the way to the Supreme Court, really through a very complicated, about 15-year-long history of different appeals. And it was finally settled last summer with, I think, what will decades from now be seen as a historic victory for indigenous land rights in the United States. So the season kind of covers that case and then broadens out to talk about language and the Indian Child Welfare Act and some other issues that are important in terms of tribal sovereignty and federal Indian law.
Yeah, you know, the thing that's interesting about that is you started it and the Supreme Court ruling hadn't happened yet. And, you know, you mentioned the Murphy and then it ended with McGirt. So what happened was, like, my understanding is Murphy sort of got tabled for while McGirt moved up. And that was the final ruling, was the McGirt case that, you know, affirmed the jurisdiction of the tribe. So I'm just curious, you know, like, how did you manage to sift through these really complicated legal jurisdictional issues combined with a very long and complicated history of the tribes in Oklahoma to sift that down into, you know, short podcast episodes?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it was definitely, you know, there were some hard decisions about, I think, as always happens in reporting and journalism, about what to leave in and what to cut. But, you know, in our reporting, you know, we were able to talk to the elected leaders of Muscogee Creek Nation, some legal experts in federal Indian law. We went out and we talked to some of the lawyers who actually worked on Murphy's decision in the 2000s. So before it got to the sort of federal appellate level, and it was a case we all knew about, you know, and then we also just talked to people who would be impacted by the outcome and really tried to take what is a very complicated, legally dense case and make it into a story that folks could follow and be engaged with. And I think that that's what's so great about podcasting, is that you can use people's actual voices, you know, you can hear people and it's like they're talking to you. And then you can also really use stories, which I think is something that, you know, as Indigenous people, I think we've always used. And I think this is a really great format for using those stories to illuminate some of these more complicated issues.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious your opinion on the Murphy McGirt case and the outcome of it. You know, before the Supreme Court ruled, we had lots of folks, legal experts on the show saying that nothing will change and that the state of Oklahoma's assertion that it will radically change Oklahoma and radically change jurisdiction, that was incorrect and that very little would change. And I'm wondering, you know, was that your opinion before? And then as you've seen the ruling and the consequences of the ruling,
has nothing changed, or is it a dramatically different Oklahoma?
Yeah, so I live not within the reservation boundaries of Muscogee Creek Nation, but in the reservation boundaries of Cherokee Nation, in which there's a separate case, but there's a case sort of moving through the appellate process right now about our reservation status. And I would say that no, life here on the ground has not changed. It has not split the state in two or launched Oklahoma 100 years back in history, which are both direct quotes from Oklahoma's arguments in the case. But the sun comes up and sets every day, and life, for the most part, Oklahoma has continued as normal. In addition to the podcast, I actually did some reporting for The Atlantic during the McGirt case, because that was one of Oklahoma's big arguments, was that there would be thousands of people like Mr. McGirt and Mr. Murphy who had been convicted under state law and would then come forward and be able to overturn those convictions. And, they almost painted the picture of, like, that the jailhouse doors would just kind of fly open. And that sounds plausible if you don't understand how the criminal appeals process works. But if you dig into the laws about the criminal appeals process, it's actually really improbable. There's this really strict time limit on when people can file an appeal after their conviction has been what the legal term is called finalized. But basically, like, a year after they've been convicted, or like they appealed their case and they lost that appeal, which the vast majority of people who can appeal their conviction like lose. And so, yeah, I dug into that for The Atlantic, and we looked actually at the court dockets of people to be like, okay, like, are they still within this window of when they could file a federal habeas petition? And we found that less than 10% of the cases that we investigated did. And so what is happening is that a lot of people are finding out that they're ineligible for these appeals, and then the people who are eligible, their cases are just being moved to federal court and being prosecuted there. So like Mr. McGirt, actually, I should say, who is at the heart of, the namesake of McGirt v. Oklahoma, his case was retried in federal court and he was convicted. And so throughout this whole process, what happened is that he was just transferred from a state prison to a federal prison, And so I think that a lot of the speculation that Oklahoma had was pure speculation. And I think what's ironic is that since the verdict, it actually hasn't gone away. Oklahoma has doubled down on this narrative, that the sky is going to fall down as a reason why now we need congressional legislation to quote unquote fix the McGirt decision. But here we are in December, 6 months after the verdict, and all of the things that they've said are going to happen haven't, but they're still arguing that we're going to experience chaos. So I think that argument loses water as the months pass, but that doesn't mean that they've stopped trying to forward it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it can leave things in an uncertain area, and I can understand concerns, but at the same time, it just seemed like a lot of fodder for some pretty funny memes going around as well.
Yeah, well, and I think what's so ironic about advancing, this argument that tribal jurisdiction is scary in front of the Supreme Court is that it's the Supreme Court that has limited tribal jurisdiction. So because of a Supreme Court decision in the 70s, tribes don't have criminal jurisdiction over non-Native folks on their land, on our land, for most crimes, except for a few carve-outs for domestic violence. And then when it comes to civil jurisdiction, tribal civil jurisdiction is also extremely limited by the Supreme Court, again, in the 80s. And so, for Oklahoma to come and say that, the tribes are going to be the new sheriff in town, when you look at the law that has already existed, actually reservation status doesn't mean that tribes have jurisdiction over non-Native people, non-Native owned land, and non-Native corporations on their land. So they're kicking up a lot of dust when tribal jurisdiction is already severely limited.
Well, Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us today. And I understand there'll be a second season.
Yeah. So we are in production right now, reporting on and doing interviews for the second season. So, and that season is going to come out this spring. So if you subscribe to This Land on any of the platforms where you get podcasts, you'll find out when it hits.
Can you give us a hint of what it's about, or is it going to be a surprise?
Yeah, I can give a hint. So we're looking at a case that is challenging the constitutionality of a law called the Indian Child Welfare Act. So we're going to be digging into that case and the stakes of that case, and also why it's happening. And we're looking to speak with a family. We're still trying to identify, if I can give a shout out. We have very limited information from court documents, but we're trying to identify a Navajo family that lives in New Mexico that was interested in adopting a Navajo child in the Fort Worth area in Texas, and withdrew their petition after the white foster family sued. We'd really like to talk to that family about their experience. And so if people know that family, or if that's you, people can contact me. My email is just rebecca.nagel@gmail.com. And so, we're reporting on that case and trying to talk to all the folks who are involved in it. It's a really complicated case, but the stakes are really, really high, not just for the families that have been impacted by the case, but for the broader implications on tribal sovereignty and Native rights.
All right, Rebecca Nagel, thank you so much for joining us. We've got a link to This Land on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com, if you want to check it out. It's a podcast about Indian federal jurisdiction and crime in Oklahoma. And if you're just joining us today, we are talking about podcasts. If you want to get in on the conversation, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. After the break, we are going to talk with three more podcast producers about their work, and we'll be right back.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the SAMHSA-sponsored Opioid Response Network, working with tribal communities across the nation to address the opioid crisis. Breaking the cycle starts with preventing opioid misuse, treating opioid use disorder with medications and counseling, and recovery support during all phases of recovery. If you or a loved one is challenged by opioid use disorder, you can find additional information at aaip.org.
You're tuned in to Native America Calling. Thanks for joining us today. We are talking podcasts. Let's head up north and talk with Phelan Johnson. She's the co-host of The Secret Life of Canada and the host of Unreserved on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. And she is Mohawk and Tuscarora Bear Clan from Six Nations Grand River Territory. Welcome to Native America Calling, Phelan.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. Okay, so how is hosting of Unreserved going?
It's good. We're about halfway through the season of me hosting. So I had guest hosted the show a couple of times before, or once before. And I'd been on the show, so I was pretty familiar with it. But it's definitely a different thing to be in the captain's chair.
Absolutely. And if for folks who don't know Unreserved, you can catch it on in anywhere you get podcasts, as well as on CBC's website. And I believe that Native Voice One replays some Unreserved episodes as well. But I really wanted to chat with you about The Secret Life of Canada. I love this concept, which is, the history that you got taught in your classrooms and history books and things like that. It's not quite what you think. And so tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, sure. So I co-host and co-write the podcast with a good friend of mine, Leah Simone Bowen. Leah's from Barbados, second generation Canadian. And so we are both playwrights. We both trained in theater. And so, we would get together and have coffee and just talk about theater stuff and things that we were working on. And a lot of the time it would have a history angle to it. Those were the things that we were just sort of, drawn to And so we'd start talking about these things that we were writing about for theater. And then one day Leah said to me, we should start a podcast, because I think that's how most podcasts are started, in a coffee shop. Right. And it's just sort of a very glib idea. So we sort of sketched an outline and decided to look into some subjects that we wanted to know more about, that we were curious about. And so, you know, our first episode, we were very lucky to run into a producer who had technical skills, because we didn't have those. We didn't possess those skills. We have the writing skills and we have the hosting skills, but we didn't have the technical side of it, Dan. So we took a podcast workshop, and that's where we met our first producer. So that was very lucky for us. And so the first season of the show, we looked at things like, Banff National Park and the park system in general. We looked at the Iprawash crisis, and we're now finishing up our third season. And this small idea that started in a coffee shop has just really seemed to taken off and really seems to speak to people.
Do you have a favorite episode?
That's like asking me to pick a favorite child. I think the one that I'm sort of drawn to a lot is the episode we did on water. So we looked at indigenous trade routes using water, how corn traveled from the Gulf of Mexico up into Canada in the area that I live now, which is my people's traditional territory, and corn is such an important crop to so many nations. So it was really fun to sort of share that story with people. But then we also looked at things like drinking water on reserves, and why this is still a thing in almost 2021 that, you know, so many communities don't have potable water. So it was very expansive.
That's something that's in the news right now, because there was somebody who promised that they would fix the boil water, or fix the water issues on the reserves by this year, or I think it's next year. And can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, Justin Trudeau has made multiple promises about getting potable water to our communities. And it's an ongoing thing, right? The thing about the water episode was that I found that it's always timely, unfortunately. Mm. So issues of water are always timely. There are some things that are unfortunately evergreen when you're talking about Indigenous rights, and water is one of those things. So I think, with that episode, we really wanted to trace sort of the blueprint of so many places in North America and across the world. Water dictates where people settle, where they live, trade, transport, agriculture, all of those things are tied to water. And the unfortunate thing is that a lot of that knowledge, that traditional knowledge that comes from Indigenous people of those lands isn't taught, isn't understood, and isn't respected. And it's so very evident when you look at the fact that so many Indigenous people do not have clean drinking water. I grew up without water. We did not have running water. And when I tell people that, I live in, my community is an hour and a half outside of Toronto, which is the largest city in Canada, and an hour and a half away from here, people don't have clean drinking water.
Yeah. It's something our listeners in Native America Calling definitely can relate to as well. Well, I'm glad you're doing this work, Phelan. And what advice do you have for somebody who's maybe sitting in the coffee shop and saying, dude, we should start a podcast?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I love about the forum is that it's free, right? Generally, these are free things. People can download them if you're in a place with internet or can access internet, which I know isn't always the case, but you can download this free thing. And it's such a nice platform for storytelling in so many different ways. The reach is so far, you can reach so many people. Coming from a background in theater, mm-hmm. Leah and I always talk about how if 50 people came to your, a production of your show, you'd be like, yes. And with podcasting, the audience is huge.
It is so expansive. You could hit 100 just within the first hour. That's something I really like about it too. Well, Phelan, thank you so much for joining us today. If you want to catch her podcasts, also radio shows, The Secret Life of Canada and Unreserved, you can head over to CBC and check them out there. We appreciate you joining us. And let's add one more podcast to the lineup. We've right here joining us from Albuquerque is Dr. Nick Estes. He's the co-host of the Red Nation podcast, and Nick is Laura Brewer Sue. Welcome back, Nick.
Thanks for having me, Monica.
Hey. Okay, so Red Nation, of course, is an organization first, and then you added a podcast. Talk to us about that, about, you know, using it as an organizing tool.
Sure. So we started doing podcast recordings back in 2018, and we launched as an official podcast in 2019. And since then, we've, you know, produced over 100 episodes. We try to do one a week, and we do current topics episodes, anything from, you know, doing readings to doing episodes on literary traditions, such as the Ocheti Shakoni literary tradition. So we try to be wide-ranging. We don't just do heavy political analysis or just education work. We do, you know, current events. So, for example, one of my favorite episodes was the Wet'suwet'en struggle earlier this year. In 2020, after the police had raided the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police had raided the Unist'ot'en camp in Wet'suwet'en territory in British Columbia. And we got a chance to interview one of the matriarchs from that struggle after she was released after getting arrested. And she gave this really beautiful, detailed kind of oral history of the Wet'suwet'en matriarchy, as well as their governance systems, and how this liquid natural gas line was interfering with their right to live on their own land. So very diverse kind of topics, but nonetheless, I think pertinent to the issues facing Indigenous people.
Yeah, one of the things I love about podcasts that's, you know, a little bit different than radio is that you're not really beholden to a time limit. And so if you want to let the Wet'suwet'en elder speak and continue, you know, say everything that she needs to say, you can do that. You have the space to do that. Is that something that sort of resonates with you, being able to allow the space and time to be for what needs to be said?
Yeah, there is definitely an oral tradition in Indigenous communities. And I think some of that is reflected in our podcast. You know, we do kind of just basic interviews style, but also we also allow, you know, the space for elders or, you know, knowledge keepers to, you know, elaborate these positions that, you know, you can't just get in a soundbite. Or, you know, if you listen to a radio show, sometimes where there's a time limit, and so they're only allowed like 30 seconds, if that. So this is a kind of space for them to really elaborate these positions and these perspectives to help people, you know, digest. We're not a hot take podcast. We're a slow cooker.
I like that. Well, if folks are just starting 100 episodes, Nick, man, that's a lot. folks are, you know, wanting to dive in, where would you recommend that they start, from the beginning, or can you just jump in the middle? Do you have a particular episode that you think would really resonate with our listeners?
So we're not a serial podcast. So you can jump in anywhere in the podcast stream. But like I said, I would say that the episodes that we did on, you know, Thanksgiving, for example, with Meshpi Wampanoag folks was very fascinating. The episode that we did on Wet'suwet'en was also really good. We did some episodes, for example, that a lot of people are revisiting is one with Dr. Andrew Curley from the Navajo Nation, where we talked about the Navajo Generating Station that was recently torn down, and he gave a really fascinating history of coal extraction and mining in the Navajo Nation and its role in powering the Southwest, and how the Navajo Nation has kind of like structured its political economy around resource extraction and what that means for, you know, everyday Navajo people when they're, you know, working or finding jobs or trying to get clean water. So we have those kind of like slow burner episodes that I encourage people to go back and listen to. They're not, some of them are newsy, you know, so they respond to a moment. but we tried to make our interviews, you know, kind of evergreen in the sense that they can be listened to at any point in time. So start from the beginning, start from the end. It doesn't matter.
All right, Nick, thanks so much for joining us today. And Nick's podcast, the Red Nation podcast, you can find a link to it on our website, nativeamericacalling.com. Nice to hear from you, Nick.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
And finally, today, it wouldn't be a podcast show without talking about one of the biggest podcasts out there, Toasted Sister. It's about Indigenous food, and it's hosted and produced by our very own Andy Murphy, who is Navajo. Welcome to Native America Calling, Andy.
Hello.
Hey. All right. So did you think you'd make it to 70 episodes when you first started out this podcast?
No, when I started it out back in 2017, it was kind of just like a hobby, something that I wanted to do on my spare time because I love food. I love talking about food, and that's pretty much all I talk about. But, you know, I had so much like extra content from, you know, talking to Native chefs for Native America Calling. And then I got so many ideas about producing shows about food, but they wouldn't all fit in Native America Calling. So it was you who kind of like pushed me and said, why don't you start a podcast? You have everything here. And I'm like, yeah, right. I do have everything here. The studio, I have these, you know, radio writing skills and then, you know, radio editing skills. So I just directed all that towards Toasted Sister and just kind of put my head down and did some producing, and then here it is, 70 episodes in, and I'm kind of tonight gonna put together the 71st episode, which is gonna be about Indigenous immigrant farm workers. So I'm really excited about that one.
Yeah, I was going to say, Andy, it's so much more than just food. You know, you have chefs sitting down and talking about cultural appropriation with food, or you're talking, you know, you're interviewing about bats and pollinators. And I mean, it's so wide open just beyond food. And one of the things that I really am interested in what you've been doing recently is you've been sort of expanding and sort of creating an economic model for this too, which is something that we haven't quite talked about in the show, which is, you know, you have a Patreon page. Would you recommend that podcast producers, you know, try, because it is cheap to make podcasts, but it's not free. And so would you recommend, you know, trying out Patreon as a means to sort of pay for the things that come along with making a podcast?
I think so. I mean, I only started my Patreon page like a couple of months ago, and I struggled a whole bunch with like imposter syndrome. I mean, I did a whole bunch of like freelance work because I'm a freelance multimedia journalist too, outside of Native America Calling and outside of Toasted Sister. So that's how I've been paying for all of my Toasted Sister stuff. And you know what I have to pay for is like web hosting, hosting on SoundCloud, where I host all my audio, and some little equipment here and there. And sometimes before COVID, I would be traveling to places that were like day trips, or if I traveled anywhere, I'd make sure to also book an interview at the same time. So those were the kind of things that I had to pay for. But you know, starting Patreon a couple months ago is kind of a game changer for me. I feel like I don't have to hustle so hard to produce stuff for other people as a freelancer. Now I can just be Toasted Sister, and that's it. And I think if you have a really good product, a really good quality podcast, because not every podcast is good quality, Patreon is the way to go, I think.
Well, we could talk another 2 hours about good audio, good podcast, good storytelling quality. If you want to check out Toasted Sister Podcast, it's toastedsisterpodcast.com. And we've got a link on our website as well. Andy, it's great to hear from you. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thanks so much to everybody else who joined our show today. Rebecca Nagel, John Kane, Nick Estes, Phelan Johnson, and Natalie Welch. We're back tomorrow with a conversation about becoming a veterinarian. I'm senior producer Monica Brain. We'll see you tomorrow.
O siau, nahi u alihe lusti da skolaha, gehi a tata na iti si danela usti una danilo his tena, julo sai. Yzati no usti una danilo his tena, yo stela di gutani das doti o wasa adalsi doti. Tatlano heta nioia a yela nudanadega an accestis naski, yged stela. At healthcare.gov, ale 1-800-318-2596. He age tano se Medicare, ale Medicaid una dalgai.
If you're hurting in your relationship and want to talk, Strongheart's Native Helpline is a confidential and anonymous domestic violence helpline for Native Americans available at 1-844-762-8483 or connect with a live advocate by using the Chat Now button at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer support and referrals for resources daily, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time. This program supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.